afternoon, and welcome to another episode, well, I should say the episode of We the People Radio. It's the second one for the whole year. It's already February. We have been in the land time forgot.
It's been kind of a rough road for the last month.
They call it COVID. Yeah, so we did our show with you guys the 2nd of January, and then disappeared. That was Joe Biden right there.
We disappeared.
I was channeling Big Joe.
That was good.
Disappeared. No, we did a little bit. Bill made a trip to Reading Medical. We'll save that for a different day.
Yeah, that was a whole other story.
Wholly unpleasant. One thing we can let you know, we're a tale of two strategies. On the one hand, you go to your doctor months ahead of time, and you have a really frank conversation about what happens when you get the virus and what's the plan, right? Then you have all the medication, you got a plan, you go about it. Then you have the other strategy where you go to your doctor and you say, hey, what happens when I get the virus? And he goes, well, you should get the vaccine. And that's the end of that. And then you get it, and then you get to go to the hospital.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And the advice there was, what happens if I get it? Well, take some Tylenol, and if it gets bad, go to the hospital. That's not the recommendation you're looking for.
Yeah. So if your doctor's telling you that, you might want to make a switch really fast before everybody else figures out that's what their doctor's telling them. But I'm here to tell you there are doctors who will give you better advice than that and set you up for success if you plan ahead. So if you haven't gotten it yet, you should plan ahead. And if you already got it, wahoo.
Wahoo, you got the antibodies.
And then some, because you earned them. Bill earned his antibodies.
I did it hard.
Whatever he's got. However many he has, he earned every single one of them. Oh, my gosh. So do you even remember who our sponsor is?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, I haven't been there for a while, but...
That's right, you haven't seen him in a month.
Yeah, I think, what was it, 3rd of January?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was Monday.
Yeah. So, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And they've got a whole lineup of John Deere equipment up there to look at. Go up and see them. Or if you need service on your equipment, they got a fully staffed service department. Or parts. They can get parts for pretty much everything as well. So go up and see them or give them a call at...
226-9226.
There you go. 226-9226.
Yes. I had it.
Yeah, I still have a little brain fog going, but I'm not getting through it.
You had trouble stacking cans in the grocery cart yesterday.
Yeah, that was weird. That was very weird.
First trip to the grocery store in a month, and he got stymied by cans.
Yeah, that was a very weird experience. So, yeah, go up and see him or catch him on the web at PapeMachinery.com.
You see somebody wandering around really slow, it's probably Bill.
I went from 65 to 85 in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, they called me the first day I was in the hospital. The nurse called and wanted to know if we were all set with a walker at home. And I said, no, we don't have a walker at home. And she goes, well, does he use a wheelchair? Well, ma'am, he's 65. He's just 85 today, but he's going to be 65 again later. I mean, he's not going to stay 85.
I didn't really feel like I needed to make that investment right away.
God, it lost 20 pounds.
22 pounds.
22 pounds.
In 2.5 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because I was doing the cooking either, just in case anyone was curious who actually knows us. No, he just like faded away.
Yeah.
It was
not a good deal. So what do we
if you have not experienced the magic of the virus, talk to your doctor ahead of time. And so what is today? Today's the 6th of February, which is lovely to say that we're going to start off another month great. And got a show next week with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. I've been dying to have him on because of all the Russia stuff, the Russia and Ukraine stuff. He is an absolute expert on all of that. So on the 13th, we will be chatting with him, and I know you'll learn a lot about that. This week, however, I was also dying to do a show with Dr. Shizong Chen because of the Olympics and everything with China. They've been big in the news, and I knew he would have all sorts of insight and good information for us. I'll give you a little bio in case you haven't heard our shows with him before, and they are all listed on the web at wethepeopleradio.us. I think we're the only people out there not doing a podcast, but or downloading it, your podcast, wherever your podcast lives or whatever that they all rattle off. But we do have free archives on our website. I guess they're kind of like podcasts because it's sound with no commercials. And doesn't cost you anything to listen to. You don't have to join or, I don't know.
Just click
give
on
us your. You don't have to give us your email. You don't have to do anything.
Listen for free.
Show up and listen for free. So at wethepeopleradio.us, you can listen to a backlog of shows on China. I think you'll find them very interesting, actually. So Dr. Chen has been active in projects concerning China for over 30 years. He's founded, co-founded, or been spokesperson for a number of organizations, including concerning China, and has spoken extensively on issues related to China. He began his activism in 1989 when he helped to organize supporting activities during the 1989 Beijing student movement. He was outraged by the June 4th massacre, and he founded the Tiananmen Square Foundation and has served on the board of the Press Freedom Guardian and was elected as the vice president of the Independent Federation of Chinese Students and Scholars in the U.S. And I'm going to kind of skip to the end here. I'll add some middle info later, but he was born in China in 1962, and at 15, he entered the gifted program at China University of Science and Technology, came to the U.S. in 1982 to study, and received his Ph.D. in molecular biology at the University of California, San Diego, and currently owns and runs a molecular biology startup in San Diego. Ta-da!
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So, definitely qualified to speak on the topic. Of China and the virus, too. He's got some hot tips on the virus. Maybe he'll give us that as well. So we didn't really plan out
Hello.
What we're going to talk to him about. So take it away, Dr. Chen.
Hello. Welcome back.
Hey.
To the living, huh? Yeah.
Usually it would be you who said it. Oh, I'm glad I got the chance to say it to you. Welcome back.
Yeah, it was touch and go. Yeah, I didn't know if I was going to be a co-host there for a while.
Yeah, I was going to come back and do it myself, and I was like, I don't really feel that good either, and Bill sounds terrible, so I don't know. I think we played some of your stuff during the when we were in the land time forgot, but I'm not totally sure. I'd have to go back and look. You know, give people your hot tip on lungs for the folks that have either dealt with the virus or will be dealing with it in the future and have complications with their lungs. You mind doing that?
Yeah. No, I don't mind doing it. In fact, I'll be glad to do it. This would be, in fact, not only for, COVID-19, for any kind of a lung problem. You can actually do it by yourself. Our shoulder blade has it's a piece of bone that in the back of on both sides in the back of the shoulder, and has a vertical edge. And then has a horizontal edge to it. Okay, so when I'm talking about the edge, I'm talking about the vertical edge, on both sides of the our spinal cord. Right. So go find whenever you have a lung problem, right, go find a corner. Either it's a bookcase or a corner of your wall or refrigerator, any kind of a 90-degree angle that protrude out, and you lean your back against it along the shoulder blade. Right. And press against it, right? The inner part of that. By inner, I'm talking about from the spinal cord towards the shoulder blade, and grind against that. If you don't feel any pain, then you're okay. Right. Actually, you can check yourself. Whenever you have any doubt, whether you might come down with something in the lung, right? And you press against it. If you truly have a problem, particularly in COVID-19, you'll be very painful.
Right? I can attest to that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you'll know the spot. It's the squishy part between your spine and your shoulder blade, and the harder you press, the quicker you'll find the problem area. It hurts.
Right. So if you are normal, you only feel the pressure. You only feel the normal pressure. But if you have any kind of illness, not just the COVID, any kind of lung issue, you feel the pain from inside out, right? And go ahead and press against it, grind against it, right? You can grind as long as you want, as frequent as you want, right? Usually, the more frequent, the harder you grind against it, the faster the healing, right? For the first day when you press against it, it'll be painful, but the second or third day, it'll be worse, right? And then after maybe 2-3 day, or sometimes if the situation is very severe, or you didn't press very hard at the beginning, I mean, may last in the fourth day. But then you will start to reduce. The pain will reduce. And and continue to press against it, and then the pain will be gone, and you'll heal. This is the Chinese acute pressure, right? And that's the horizontal shoulder blade edge. And then actually there's a vertical one, but this you won't be able to find unless you have like those hanging corners, right? But then you can find a piece of rod or anything that's a piece of root rod. You can use your left hand and press against the right shoulder, or use the right hand, press the left shoulder, the vertical part of the shoulder blade, and same idea. So both edge are responsible. They have a whole line of several acupressure points for the lung. Right? So those are the two very effective self, two lines of pressure point you can do yourself to help yourself when it comes to lung issue.
Yep, and anybody who's had long-term lung problems knows that that's where your back goes out all the time. It's always right between the shoulder blades in there, where all your nerves for the lungs run. And when a lot of people are winding up with pneumonia or walking pneumonia during this, as a result of the virus, and the first thing you notice is you have a real tight band across that upper part of your back, right across by your shoulder blades. It's like a really tight band, and you feel like, well, why would my back hurt right there? If you're really tired and you don't wheeze, typically pneumonia, you don't have the wheezing and things that are the telltale signs, especially for people who don't get it that often. But that back pain and the fatigue are a clue. This helps a lot. If you do have pneumonia, of course, you got to take antibiotics. But this will open up the airways a lot. Really is very helpful. And thanks for calling us when we were sick and reminding me that I guess I should have figured that out myself. I should have known that already. But very helpful. We've got to take a quick break before we get to our
flu as well. Any flu, coughing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Anytime you wind up with a whole bunch of coughing, of course. That's the place in your back that's always really super tight, too. We've got to take a really quick break. We're going to come back with Dr. Chen. We're going to talk about all the stuff with, like, the Olympics and all sorts of things. But I thought that his information on how to help with the breathing was useful, since a lot of us are doing that these days, needing help with breathing.
Or not.
Bill would like to give that up. He suddenly wound up in my world and didn't really like living there. Go figure. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Look at that. He remembered.
I did.
He's back.
I know it.
Breathing, but it's kind of also about spying, so
keep an eye on them. You never know. That breathing thing may be temporary
for all those people who took their phones to the Olympics, took their own phones and didn't pay attention. You might as well load that as your theme song, because you're never going to have another private thought. Dr. Chen, what do you think about all that? We haven't been watching the Olympics. Bill turned them on right before we left just to see if the stands were empty, and they are. But
yeah, what it came to me when I thought of the Olympics. What came to me is to realize that when it comes to awarding humanity's worst enemies, no one even come close to the International Olympic Committee's perfect score. I'm talking about perfect score here. Right. The IOC awarded the 1936 Olympics to Germany. And then the next one, the 1940 Olympic Games to Japan, two countries responsible for World War II. As if 1936 is not enough, I didn't give them, 1940. Right? And then IOC next award the 1980 Olympics to the Soviet Union, a country, right? Actually, a whole block of countries responsible for the Cold War. Right? And then IOC award two Olympics, not one, right? Two Olympics, the 2008 Summer Olympics and the 2022, the one that's going on, Winter Olympics, to Communist China, a country responsible for the COVID-19 spread, genocide of Tibetan Uyghurs and Mongolians, and large-scale organ harvesting, right? And I need your help to, I want to come up with a new term because World War II, and Cold War was the previous wars. Mm-hmm. What the Communist China is running against or having against whole war is a high. It's a deprivation war, or it really is a war against the whole world's moral standard. Right? So I haven't come up with a good term yet, but that we should come up with a term and make it popular. Right? So. You think about it, nobody else have done that. IOC managed to not miss a single one of the worst enemies. Now, that's why I say it's a perfect score. And some people might say, well, Olympics is a very popular event. Well, That's not an explanation. The World Cup is more popular with bigger revenues than the Olympic Games.
No kidding.
But, has stayed clean of those, the Buffalo villains. Right. And then what's more amazing is that human beings have the ability to learn from errors, failures, and injuries. But IOC has managed to ignore the villains' crimes. Number one, and number two, its own blunders. Number three, has consistently rejected numerous calls for it to correct its mistakes, including the current one. Right? In fact, the IOC awarded the 1940 Olympics to Tokyo after the 1936 Berlin Olympics. Right? And then that is also after Japan's invasion and occupation of Northeast China in 1931, and also after Japan's withdrawal from the League of Nations in 1933 to defy world condemnation of its invasion. And despite all that, despite all this information, IOC continue, on its path of, awarding humanity's worst enemies, right?
Yeah, it's not like all these bad things happened after they got the
right or
award,
nobody knew
award for the Olympics.
Right.
This stuff's been going on long before that, and they just turned a blind eye to it.
Right, and it is not that the IOC Olympic Games do not have lofty ideals. Right? In fact, the IOC distinguishes itself from all other. I mean, not a single one, but all other sports governing bodies by adorning itself as the leader of an international movement, the so-called Olympics movement. And that movement, the Olympic movement is in IOC's website. So this movement has a philosophy. It's called Olympism. And in the Olympic Charter, right, it's spelled out, expounded as a philosophy of life, a quote, all right? I'm quoting it, a philosophy of life. And this philosophy includes some very fundamental principles, such as, quote, social responsibility and respect for universal fundamental ethical principles. My goodness, right? And then a view, right, quote, a view to promoting a peaceful society concerned with preservation of a human dignity.
Oops.
Right?
Kind of undershot the mark on that one.
Right? They even state, quote again, the practice of sports is a human right. Oh, human right. My goodness. Right? And every individual must have the possibility to practice sports without discrimination of any kind.
Wow.
I wonder if they, if they know what they're talking about, right? But more than that, okay, if that is not lofty enough, right, Pierre de Coubertin, the founder of the modern Olympics, and of course the founder of IOC, right, his conception of the Olympism was even grander. Right? He said in the 1892 proposal of revival of the games, the Olympic Games, quote, the first essential characteristic of the Olympics, both ancient, right, as well as modern, is to be a religion. It represents above and outside church humanity's superior religion. It's not just a religion, right? It's a superior religion, right? If he was mistaken, or misspoken for one time, that's not the case, right? his sentiment would, you know, become firmer and even more generalized in his later years. He wrote in his memoirs, Olympics, and said, "For me, sports is a religion, with church, dogma, ritual." Right? And he's not alone, though. Avery Brundage, the single most responsible person for delivering the U.S. participation of the 1936 Berlin Olympics for Hitler and the IOC's dominating president from 1950 to 1972, 20 years, went further and claimed this in an IOC full meeting. Quote, "The Olympic movement is a 20th century religion, a religion with universal appeal which incorporates all the basic values of other religions." My goodness, right? "All the basic values of other religions, a modern, exciting, blah, 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 right? And we of the IOC are its disciples," right? So, now this is a serious topic, right? So the first question is, how did this, quote, humanity is superior, not just one religion, but humanity is superior religion, end up partnering with the humanity's worst sinners repeatedly? Right. And then I would say it's not alone in when it comes to the Olympics. From 1982, the United Nations, together with IOC, we issue a so-called Olympic truth whenever there's the Olympic Games for the year. I mean, so basically every other 2 years, the two would come together to issue an Olympic truth. And this Olympic truth, they claim, is modeled after the ancient Olympic truth. Because in Greek time, when the ancient Olympic was held, there was a pan Greek Olympic truth. For the period of the Olympic Games, all the state nations, or the city-state, actually the city-state of all the Greek cities, would hold a truce to allow people to travel to Olympia Mountain and the athletes to go there to participate. Right? Now here, give us the first, you know, hint. What went wrong with IOC? Because the ancient Olympic truth was in honor of Zeus, in honor of deities, or in honor of the Greek gods. So the whole Olympic Games, it's a worship of divinity. Right? It's not a worship of human activity. It is for the honor of Greek gods that people at that time have this Olympic truth. Now, the IOC managed to make a human sport, or they want to make a human sport, or right now it's more of a, you know, including human entertainment, and have people to honor that with the Olympic truth, right? And so this is, I think, is what makes it so bad, right? The sanctification of Olympics is the root of IOC's, you know, often self-inflicted schizophrenic contradiction, I think, right? To promote and demonstrate Olympics' lofty, they, you know, they raise themselves, they exalt themselves to the quasi or even superior, let's say, superior religious ambition, IOC inclines to award games to risky hosts. Right? They want to show their superior. They pride themselves to bring world peace. But when those risks became crisis, the coward and callous IOC then ran to its infamous defense. You know, it consistently uses two defenses. Right, in those cases, right. Number one, Olympics is apolitical. Right. Number two, to boycott the Olympics would be unfair to athletes only. So, but the problem is when the Olympics committee, when IOC award Olympic Games to those problematic regimes, why didn't they? Wasn't that a political move?
Yeah, you would think.
And so they make it for themselves. They make the trouble for themselves. Right? They cause the problem, and when the problem comes, they do not have the guts or the courage or the judgment to deal with it. And they run away from it. Right? And then gave those opportunities or leave the Olympic Games to be exploited by those villains. And that makes the Olympics, the IOC, worse than any professional sports governing bodies. Right? You would rather have a professional, you just run it as a professional sport. And then the professional sports will just run it from the sports perspective or from the business perspective. And that will at least not get close, not avail itself for the manipulation to the likes of Hitler, to the Soviet Union, or to the CCP nowadays.
Yeah, I think they get so caught up in the money, and the other part of it is the media. We don't really have a media that's willing to call anybody on the carpet, because if they were going to be exposed for promoting the types of atrocities that go on in China, if that was actually talked about, I mean, we've done a bunch of shows on the forced organ harvesting, and if people are listening and have no idea what we're talking about, if you go to our website, click on the China tab, there are several shows on there about that, and I think it'll snap your eyes wide open. And this was going on long before the Uyghurs. This was going on with the Falun Gong people prior. And so here they do all these things, but because the media doesn't say anything and there's so much money involved, they're able to get away with all of it. It's, when we come back, I want you to remind people about the generous barbarism. Bill and I talk about all the time, and I think we learned that from you.
Yeah,
it could have been one of our other people speaking about China, but I think it was you. And I think that's a really important thing to remind people of while this is all going on. We have to take a really quick break, but we'll be back with our guest, Dr. Shizong Chen. And you are listening to We the People. You can find us with our commercial-free archives that are free for you to listen to and access. You don't have to know anything about podcasts or any of that stuff. And you can find it at wethepeopleradio.us.
Yeah.
back in the day when the media did love dirty laundry? Remember?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, you colored outside the lines and they raked you over the coals? And now?
Yeah, it just depends what size you're
on. Now they just say the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah. They make up their own dirty laundry.
That's crazy. Well, actually, they are the dirty laundry apparently over at CNN. They forgot about that. They've got their own special problems over there.
Special brand of laundry.
Yeah. Yikes.
Generous barbarism.
Yeah. Bill was trying to think of that last week, and we're like, oh, I know what it means, but I can't remember what he called it.
I shared that this maybe 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
You know, quite a while ago, but I have gone much further than that. Let me just, you know, discuss a little bit about this before I go back to the IOC's dirty laundry. All right. So, the IOC, once given the Olympics to Beijing, now has to repeatedly come out to defend Beijing, not just the awarding of the game to it, right? But have to come out to eulogize it or embellish it, you know, and resort to lies. Right? In his speech to the UN, Thomas Bach, the IOC's president, claimed to the UN that this Olympic, the Beijing Olympics, is the first Olympics completely powered by green energy. Right? And this is the worst, this is environmentally most unfriendly Olympics in the history of Olympics, because you must have read that all the snows are artificial snow. Did you read that?
No, I didn't know that. I know there wasn't very much of it, but I didn't realize it was all artificial.
Yeah, it's all artificial, and that is a very dry area. So not only it causes a lot of electricity, right? China is not a green, it's not a green energy country. So there's no way that China can provide so-called the green energy, and they have no technology to, you know, you cannot separate the electricity, say, okay, yeah, the green electricity goes to the Winter Olympics. There's no way they can do that. Right? Number one. Number two, right? That is a very drought area. And they have to ship water to that area.
Mm, another green thing.
Right, that's a very green thing, right? And so it lied for that. But have you heard of the story of Peng Shuai? This is a tennis world champion, double champion. A lady double champion, Peng Shuai. She was sexually, harassed or exploited by one of the very top officials of the communist regime. And she exposed that, right? And that becomes a big international issue. The CCP then calling in Thomas Bach for the rescue. And Thomas Bach, well, first of all, Peng Shuai, because her activism, her Me Too, was then silenced. And so that caused the international cry. The World Tennis Association, I really praise for them for that, then spoke out and pulled all the tennis tournament from China until they can guarantee, until China can guarantee Peng Shuai's safety. Now, pulling out of those tournaments, of course, threatens IOC, People are just going to say, well, why didn't, if World Tennis Association can do that, why can't you do that with the Beijing Olympics, right? That's the referendum. Right. So the IOC president came out and claimed to have had a meeting online meeting, right, with Peng Shuai, and said Peng Shuai told him that she has freedom, she's safe. Duh, what else can she do? She's inside China, right? So this creates a phenomenon, what I now call the reverse moral pressure of the free world to defend China's human rights record. I just to realize this recently, right, that many of the ugliest, most offensive human rights violations have not been exposed because the free world has a need to protect China's or communist China's image. Why? Because the free world are doing too much business with the communist China.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. If the communist China is so evil, then the people in the free world is going to question, why are we doing business with that evil regime? That produces what I call the reverse moral pressure. Now the CCP is free to do all the evil things they want to do. It is now up to the free world to defend. Well, they don't to balance. Let me say it. To balance the image the free world's own image, and Beijing's image, right? The free world has to criticize China's human rights violation. So the free world government will not appear too bad, right? But at the same time, they have to make sure that criticism is not too too severe, because if their criticism to communist China is too severe, then, as I said, people in the free world are going to question, why are we doing business with that regime? So it's a delicate balancing act, and what I call reverse moral pressure. It helps. It actually encourages, emboldens the communist China to do all the human rights violations as they want, right? And the free world has to somehow have to criticize and have to defend of the communist China's human rights record. And that is what's going on, and we see it in the International Olympics, right? So I have gone further with that. But it derived the cause was what I said two years earlier, the generous barbarism, right? And anything that the only way for the free world IOC or any organization to get out of that terrible situation is to completely cut with any relationship with that evil regime, right? But I think it's up to the people in this country to learn more and have more outcry, and you're doing a wonderful job here, your program. And it takes that to force the media, the government, to get out of the reverse moral pressure, to face the reality, right? So, I'll go back to the, you know, this is Olympics week, so I'll go back to the Olympics to continue on what I said earlier. So IOC have lofty ideals. The problem is that their ideal is too lofty. Right? IOC has exalted the Olympics to the plane of religion. By doing so, it confuses secular activities with sacred religion practice and spiritual cultivation. Secular activities, be they sports or entertainment or education or cultural or commercial, whatever, peacemaking even, right? And no matter how we wish to you know, embellish those secular activities, all belong to the same human plane, right? They are secular activities. Orthodox religion and spiritual cultivation, on the other hand, connect humans to divinity and enable humans to transcend to sacred and higher plane, right? Once you confuse those two, once secular activity such as sports are made to be sacred, it denies divinity. It really severs human beings' connection with God's providence and salvation, and therefore deprive human beings' path of transcendence. I guess this can only be understood by people with strong religious belief, right? But regardless, people understanding or not, the sanctification of secular activity is worse than leaving it as secular activity. That's why I say to exalt Olympics to the plane of religion is worse than leaving them as sports. That's why World Tennis Association has done better than IOC. That's why FIFA has done better. Actually, any other world sports organization has done better than IOC because they keep it as secular activity, right? But IOC's denying of divinity is what causes it its own fatal flaw. And so this is why Olympics is so problematic. I cannot think of any other, besides outside those humanity's worst enemies, next in line would be IOC. That's how bad it is. And this is what I have to.
Well, we have you as our hostage for the next hour, and we're going to continue with this theme. So I've got to take a quick break for the news, and we will be right back. Our guest is Dr. Shizong Chin. We hope you will join us online and send this to a friend once we have the commercial-free archive posted. You can find it at wethepeopleradio.us.